Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Winning Plays Podcast is back, and the Celtics offseason is officially here. My name is Brian Robb, joined by Ryan Bernardoni, and now staring down the line at is this going to be a tough Celtics offseason? What are your impressions now going into the offseason, first of all, Ryan, in terms of where this team's at, like how, what's the level of failure essentially with this season now, and how much needs to be addressed, you know, going into this summer just out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, right, it's a disappointing end. It's hard to look at any other fan base around the league and be like, oh, 57 wins in the conference finals and losing in game seven, like, oh, it's a brutal year. Because most fan bases would kill for that. The round before, you see the 76ers going out and they're like, oh, we haven't made the conference finals in over 20 years. And Celtics are just like, oh, that's what we do every year. But once you've done it a couple of times, it's obviously disappointing when you seem to be hitting a ceiling there. And that series was obviously particularly difficult. It's just a million things going against them in a series that everybody went in feeling really confident about. And then just nothing goes right for the entire time. And that's the end. The season, I mean, we know, like, the regular season was very up and down. There were times when it felt like the team was a top tier title contender, and other times when we were like, it really didn't feel like that at all. And then you get into the playoffs and all the series are more of a slog than you would like them to be. So, it's disappointing to be talking about the off season at this point in terms of what the off season is going to be like. You know, 6 months ago, we thought it was going to be very straightforward, a team that was very stable and locked in. And now with the new CBA, you're looking at quite a few questions that need to be answered, and whether or not they need to be answered this year or next or the year after that is, I'm sure, what we'll discuss. But it's hard to know exactly what's coming in this offseason after thinking, again, like, once they made the Brogdon trade, like, it seemed like this roster would be kept together for a couple of years at the very least, and that it would be super stable, and that was sort of the calling card of what Brad was doing as a GM. And now all of a sudden, maybe it's not. So I don't know. I you were there for the press conference today, right? It sounded like they still are focused on that sort of stability and keeping the team together. But you know, how much of that is talk versus the reality of their plans?
Right. And that's the question. So Brad Stevens did talk to us today at the Aerobac Center. It was probably, I give him credit, it was like a 25-minute press conference. He pretty much took everything on the chin. It was, I guess, surprisingly, I don't think he was upbeat for it, but as far, like you mentioned, right, he was very much, you know, we're staying the course here. And it was tough, but there was a lot of good things about the year, and we want to build on that. So the Joe Mazzulla is back. He wants to beef up the bench, like, shocker, whatever that means, and how many coaches are going to be involved in that. I mean, it remains to be seen, but I'm guessing it's going to be more than one, based on where the rest of the assistants might be heading down to Houston.
If they lose three, they better one, considering the skeleton crew they were already running.
So, and what kind of, I don't know if you saw the quotes from this, right? But like, he was like, yeah, you know, it's tough of timing. Like, we tried to do it, but we also had a good staff. So it's like, what was it? One or the other here? Like, you try to do it, and like, honey, who would you talk to? Was it, you're not paying enough for these people? Like, what, you know, I know obviously there's implications involved, but I think I would expect there had been plenty of people that are were not employed right now that would love to bet on that bench. So I know you want to find the right mix, and but given how this season went for Joe and the pieces they lost during both the beginning of the season and then obviously the middle of the season with Damon Stoudemire, like that's one of those things where it's just like in hindsight, it's just like, oof, especially with this, some of the mismanagement at some of the end of these games.
And maybe everybody was waiting to see if they could get the Robert Williams contract from Detroit that Monty Williams got. Right? $12 million a year. Maybe there are some coaches sitting out there going, I don't know if I want to be an assistant, but right. Like it was weird. It was always weird. It was weird in the moment that they didn't hire anybody on, particularly after Stoudemire left, but we're right from the beginning. And I think if you are in the position of the general manager, and you're trying to think over multiple years, like you can very much make the case that it was like, it was a season where they had they put plans that they believed in place. And they were the number two seed, and they were, even in a series where they had a whole lot of stuff go against them, miserable shooting on their part, amazing shooting for the Heat, badly timed injuries, you know, some officiating decisions that killed some momentum here and there. And then just their own collapse in game two, you know, doing things that they've been doing too often, which you can't really blame on. So some things that you feel more were in their control and went poorly, and other things that you just kind of feel like they were almost out of their control. It still goes to seven games in the conference finals. And so you can very much look at it and say, you know, we hired a coach, or we elevated a coach 20 minutes before the season started. There was no opportunity to implement things in the off season. It's difficult, you know, one season is not a ton of time with, we know that teams don't have a lot of practice time and things like that. And to be able to look at that and say, look, this plan maybe would have worked had we just been able to have stability in the coaching staff. And that if we run it back next year, you know, maybe we will have that, and that it will come to fruition. And that you sort of just feel like it was close and it was just sort of a cursed ending to the year. So I get it. I think I've talked to a lot of other people about it, and everybody is sort of like, it's a really big risk to keep him is the problem. It's not that it can't work, that, you know, having Mazzulla be the head coach again can't work. You're betting on his own development and improvement in second year and having an off season and getting a better coaching staff and all that. But he was in over his head this year. If that continues on next year, then you could find yourself in a position where you're saying, well, we just had Jason Tatum's age 25 and 26 seasons when he was first team All-NBA and wasted it because of not having a good enough coach in position. And that's the risk you're running, which is a real one. But that's the decision that Brad has to make. And that's sort of what comes with the seat that he's sitting in. And you can, you know, convincingly make the argument the other way that they should have more time and continue to believe in the path that they had set originally.
Yeah. And that's, I think certainly with them coming back in that series and forcing a seventh game against Miami, that like Joe earned that, like that right. And to take that risk, because the other solutions right now also pose risks of the term of alienating the players and alienating, you know, and having to start all over again for the fourth straight year. And so there's obviously risk there too, but you're right. Like it's fair not to underrate the risk of staying status quo. But again, if you find the right parts this offseason to put around him, you find, you know, knowing that that staff was undermanned from the start, and then lost, I think, a real key piece from a player standpoint, and Damon Stoudemire, the only, you know, notable former player in the staff. But that's neither here nor there now. It is what it is. Come into place.
It still starts with the players, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, all of this ultimately comes down to the players and different decisions and different ways that players probably should play to optimize some of the parts that are on the team, starting at the top with, you know, Jason and Jalen, and also, again, a little bit of luck, and they would be playing in the finals right now, and we probably wouldn't be having this conversation at all, or we certainly wouldn't be yet. But first and foremost, we can talk in forever about coaching, and it may have ultimately been one of the factors that cost them at least going to the finals this year. In my opinion, it probably was, although not the number one factor. But really, in the end, who's playing and how well and how healthy and all that is always what matters more than any of that, really, in this league.
All right, so let's get to the players then. For entering this offseason, the Celtics have their top seven players under contract. Grant Williams is the only member, notable member of the rotation that's a restricted free agent here. And so they are very much set up to run it back as is. But as you started to outline in your post on Medium about the CBA right now and the new CBA coming into effect here, there are a whole bunch of ramifications now of if you even want to pay out, bring everyone back, there's going to be penalties that play here, both for the short term and then bigger ones for the long term. But so let's start here. Like, even if they want to bring everyone back next year, which I don't think they will, but like, is that even a feasible option from a financial and a penalty standpoint in your eyes?
It's feasible. Now, some of that comes down to what Grant gets offered in restricted free agency, right? Like if one team comes in and looks at this and says, well, the Celtics aren't going to pay him. And so we maybe under the old CBA, they would have said, it's just money. We don't want to waste our cap space here on going after a restricted free agent who we don't think we're going to get anyway. And whatever, it would have been less likely that somebody would even make a really strong offer. But I think teams now could conceivably look at him and say, we don't know if the Celtics will match this offer. Just because of the new CBA and all that comes with it. So, but setting that aside, let's say he gets something around the mid-level, which is increasing next year. So $12-ish million, somewhere around there. And they are willing to pay another hefty luxury tax bill. Then yeah, they can run the team back. And part of that is because Jalen's assumed extension doesn't kick in until the year after. But also part of that is some of the rules in the CBA come in after 1 year. Now, in my opinion, that is far too fast. Like is going to cause a host of problems across the entire league, the way that they're bringing these rule changes in. But those rule changes are 1 year away. So you very much could just run the team back. There are problems. Like, I have some concerns about that.
I wouldn't do that either. Like, you can do it. Right. It's like, it's there.
It's not a completely irresponsible, wild decision for a team that was on the doorstep of the finals. You could say, like, listen, we're just heavily in on next year, and we know that these problems are going to come, but we think that this team can win the title next year. And so, fine. Like, it is not an unreasonable path, but I think it's probably not the correct path.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, so let's start with the biggest task at hand here. And I think number one is Jaylen Brown's situation. As far as they can offer him a contract extension for up to the Supermax, which is up to nearly $300 million over 5 years, that will kick in during the 2024-25 season. Is there any case to be made at that point? You went into, again, the challenges of building a team with him and Tatum also going to be getting that number a year after Jaylen now. But is there any case to be made knowing that Jaylen's trade market is probably uncertain, given the fact that he's not going to be able to sign an extension with any team for 6 months after a trade? Like, the move here is to essentially re-sign him and then figure it out later. Is that the most logical play, essentially?
I think so. I mean, similar to what we just said about Grant and restricted free agency, it only takes one team. Like, if a team comes along and offers you something that you just would not expect to be offered for us, you know, for Jaylen's situation, where, like you said, you can't viably extend him. There's a 6 month waiting period, and then you could extend him, but there'd be no real reason for Jaylen to extend at that point. He would still have to carry his performance bonuses and his incentives to his new contract. Whereas if he just waited a few more months, he could sign the same contract without those and get a full max and maybe a player option, and you can, it would be a longer contract and all that kind of stuff that, that you would prefer, you imagine. So anybody who signs him isn't going to be able to extend him. Now, in that write-up, I thought that a team that had enough cap space could do a renegotiation extension with him right after acquiring him, because that's what you could do in the past. And I hadn't seen any reporting on it, but I went and actually read the document of what's available now. And I believe that you can't even do that anymore. Like, so if the Spurs, I propose like maybe a weird team like the Spurs gets involved because they could renegotiate and extend him. And so they would feel more comfortable with acquiring him. But I don't even think that's true. I think there's even a 6-month waiting period on that now. So it's hard to see where the market would be if, you know, one of the rumored teams, right? If the Houston Rockets come in and say, here's a ton of draft picks and Jabari Smith and whatever, and you're able to flip that to a third team for a player who, or a couple of players who come back to you, and they just make an offer that's like so draft heavy and all that, that it wouldn't help the Celtics, but that you could come up with some way to pivot that into, like, it's feasible that something like that could come along. But I just don't think that it's likely enough to be like a serious consideration. And then you hear the way that that Jason was talking and the stuff that Brad was saying today, and it just sounds very much like what the decision is that they are going to play this out at least one more year and offer him the Supermax. Will there be some terms on that? You know, is it good? Do they want to give him a player option at the end? Do they, you know, things like that, that, that they can negotiate on? But I'm assuming that they are basically going
to
put
the, do you want to commit it under 35%?
Yeah, I don't think so, right? And the problem there is, what do you really gain out of it, right? You right. get,
I mean, this is not the guy you want to do that with, I don't think.
Does $3 million make a difference? Like, it's just, if you get him at 30%, then it would make a big difference, but he's not going to sign that. And you may just, he may say, you know, well, then screw you, I'm going to go somewhere else in free agency next year. And I think that over time, we may see star players having to, I have that decision put to them more by teams saying like, well, if you take less, then we can get you another player. Whereas before it was just like, if you take less, then it will save ownership tax money. Like, that's not a great sales pitch, but like, we can add another role player to come and play with you. Players will feel that pressure in the future, but this being the first year of it and Jalen being in the Players Association leadership, like, I just think that it's, they're going to offer him 35%. He's going to sign it. They'll play out next year. And then if they win the title, it changes the way that it will be perceived and how they'll move forward from that point. If he has another step forward and resolve some of the problems in his game, then that could change things as well. But I think that they're basically, yeah, going to sign him and then wait a year and reevaluate at that point, because then the numbers get ugly after that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So seeing that that is the simplest choice for them right now and the most obvious choice and a way to keep, I think, everyone appeased, and knowing that you want to sign Jason Tatum to a Supermax next offseason, a good way of locking that in is probably keeping Jaylen Brown around for and maximizing your window for next year, which I think it'd be tough to do in any sort of, you know, conceivable trade scenario involving him. So then you look just through the rest of the roster right now, and I think the obvious place to look is the guard situation. You traded for Malcolm Brogdon last year. He became sixth man of the year. He was a nice offensive boost. But even before he got hurt in the playoffs, I thought he was a little bit of, was underwhelming in the first two series. And you just have, to be frank, you have like $60 million for three guys there in Brogdon, Smart, and White through the 24-25 season. And with the allocations of resources across your roster, with the CBA implications in play here, like it's, I feel like there's a pretty strong case to be made that one of those guys should be moved. And we all know that's not going to be Derek White. So, or probably not Marcus Smart either. Like, I think if like, it's like Brogdon seems to be the play.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are and have always been people in the organization who would be willing to trade Smart, and that they've obviously talked about it and come, it's been reported many times that they've come close on different things. So I wouldn't completely
throw away like they should negotiate. They should float it out. They should see what his market is for sure.
I mean, there's a possibility there, but in terms of his fit with the roster and his relationship with the players who are going to continue on, yeah, it would be logical that they would shop Brogdon. In my opinion, that's like the sort of base level of what they should be doing. So my concern going forward is that if they wait a year to do this, the new CBA is going to force them to cut costs on somewhere in the roster, right? You can get rid of Jaylen entirely and go cheaper second option and way cheaper second option. But and that's probably going to have to happen at some point anyway, but you're going to have to start moving towards a roster that is just less costly in your sort of mid rotation. And if you wait a year to do that, the problem is that there's going to be a bunch of other teams that probably have to do that at that point as well. And there may be a bunch of teams that try to do it this offseason. The Celtics may just be one of many teams that are trying to do it to try to get their books aligned for this new CBA. But if you wait until next year, you are at least running the risk of being in a trap where there's a half a dozen teams that are trying to dump significant amounts of salary and only two or three teams that have the ability to take that money on. Because you really can only trade those players into cap space now, or you know, waive and stretch them or something like extreme like that, if you need to just purely cut money. And you don't want, what you don't want to be in is like, oh, we have one more year of Malcolm Brogdon and we have to move him. We have to give up a first round pick in order to get off that money, or more than that, even, because we're in this market where there's just not enough teams that can take bad money. And if you don't achieve that goal of removing that money, then you end up over the second apron, and then you're encumbering draft picks 7 years out into the future, and you can't use your exceptions anymore, and you can't make trades at that. Like, it does has so many negative drawbacks to being stranded above that new second apron level the season after this one. You kind of have to start moving now and getting your books in order so that you don't get caught in that trap. And the difficult to find what the trade would be, but obvious sort of thing would be to move Brogdon either for an expiring contract that clears the money before you run into that crunch, or moving into a cap space team, getting off the contract entirely, in which case you also might be trying to get under the luxury tax this year because repeater stuff and increased luxury taxes in the new CBA and all that. But there's decisions there about what the best way to go about doing that would be is, and who the right team would be. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at Brogdon and say, like, if we could get off this contract, I don't know. So a question that's been posed to me a couple of times is, do you think they would have made the trade for him if they knew that these were the terms of the new CBA that were coming? Because
I would assume not.
And so then you're in a position where, even though they've sunk a first round draft pick into it, where you would give him away for nothing. If you could give him away to a cap space team and get literally nothing of value in back, would you do that just to sort of undo it? And saying, like, coming out and, you know, basically openly saying, like, listen, the rules changed under our feet. We don't want to have to do this, but right. The rules changed and we have to adjust to that. Because I wonder if they would do that. If a team that wants an adult in the room, which Brogdon certainly is and has cap space, or a team that's missed out on other targets and needs to get up to the salary floor or something like that, comes in and just says, like, yeah, we would take him for free, and that it would benefit the team to do it. And then you try to re-sign Pritchard or extend Pritchard if you haven't already traded him, I suppose. But right. It's not really fair, the new CBA, the way it's coming in and the teams that it's targeting. And this is kind of where the initial hit will be on the Celtics, I think.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and you mentioned, like, that's what makes this part of it easier of thing. You have a guy making $4 million who's not as good as Malcolm Brogdon, but he's there and he's also under the team's rights for several more years beyond this as a restricted free agent. So that part of the equation, like, you'll lose a little bit from a competitive standpoint, but you also have the ability to gain elsewhere in other parts of the roster. And that flexibility may make you able to build a better team, period. Since, I don't know, like, the fit of Brogdon on this team, I think there's no doubt it's useful to have that in the regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs, when it comes to maximizing, you know, Tatum and Brown and making the Celtics bigs better, like, I don't think Brogdon did that necessarily well when it mattered this year. And I think him performing with that crunch time lineup period went very poorly. If you look at the numbers there, I know that's not all on him, but I think, like, he came up short in a lot of big spots, whether it's a mixed box out or just poor defense or effort at some point. Like, it, I don't think that's going to be a massive loss for the team big picture to lose him with the flexibility you could potentially gain there.
Yeah, and just the ability to redeploy your minutes to other players. I think we've heard in stories that have been coming out, there's one on The Athletic for sure that Jared Weiss and Jay King, I think, had, where the players are basically saying, like, we wanted Grant and Rob to be on the floor more. And some of that was difficult, but particularly with Rob's health status during the year. But removing a sort of high minutes guard slash sort of wing, hard to even define his position this year, would open up the opportunity to get those guys onto the floor more and to play bigger, more defensive focused lineups as your starters. There's a whole lot of other stuff that we would have plenty of time to talk about what the best lineups and rotations would be, which we can get to at the beginning of next year. But as a base level, just saying, like, some fewer minutes from the three guards and Pritchard getting back into the rotation and what he brings to the team, and more minutes allocated to bigger players, like, you know, like the Williamses, and with, you assume, Horford stepping back a little bit as he ages and other players taking on more of those minutes. And even if that's Muscala having more minutes this year and having a real role, if he's kept on the team and stuff like that, that I don't know how much it would actually hurt the team, is I guess what I'm getting at. Is that if you had to give Malcolm Brogdon away for nothing, I don't actually know if it would impact their wins and losses that much. And because of the financial considerations that are coming, that's why I look at it and just sort of say, like, yeah, I think if a team came and said they would take him for nothing, that it would probably be kind of a cold-hearted thing to send him off to a team that's not in a great position to win, but you're trying to win a title, and that's kind of how these things work.
With Marcus, what kind of offer would you need to actually give serious consideration to? It's clearly going to be a Brogdon situation where you're looking at him to potentially give him away for next to nothing just to clear the books here. He's more important number levels there. I actually, to be honest, thought this was maybe his best postseason ever. In terms of, you know, he had his ups and down moments, but I think by and large, he played his role well offensively. He played really well defensively. He took a step back, as the whole team did. But that felt like more of like a full season thing, not like a playoffs thing for him. So it's something, you know, I look at that as a potential option, but it's like, it's hard to figure out, okay, if you do lose Marcus, like, what are you getting? What adequately replaces him, and what are the odds of them actually finding something like that?
I think that some of the conversation around Marcus becomes a conversation about if it's just sort of run its course, right? If they are tired of all that he is and brings, and does it grind you down and wear on you over time? Because I don't think that there's a trade that makes a whole lot of sense in terms of, like, matching salaries and who wants what and how you would want to rebalance the roster, because you would just kind of want another guard there, right? You could say if you're keeping Brogdon and you're moving Smart and all these other things where you could try to move towards a bigger player. But the part of the thing that I always bring up in this is people look at it and when they say, well, we need a more natural point guard, a more natural playmaker, all that. And what they really mean is, at the end of the game, when you're up by 6 points and there's 3 minutes left, they want somebody who's going to handle the ball there and run the offense to try to get rid of some of these late game foibles. And the point that I always make with that is that first is you have to make the case to Jason Tatum that he should not be doing that because he's not particularly good at it. And if he won't allow, or the team doesn't direct, or whatever it might be, for Smart or Derek White or Brogdon to do that on a regular basis, then who exactly are you going out to get in who that will change that? Like, trading Marcus Smart for Tyus Jones and being like, well, we want a more natural playmaker. He's not going to get that role in that position anyway. It's still going to be Jason Tatum dribbling the ball across the, you know, across the half court line with 7.5 seconds counted down on the 8 seconds, and then grinding the game to a crawl. And you're not going to get prime Chris Paul, right, to come in and run this team. You are going to have to deal with, nobody has an exactly perfect roster. And so, to me, what they really need to do is not to trade him away. It's either to empower him or Derek White to run the offense in those situations. And then a lot of the other things will sort of lock into place, and the things where he's a negative won't be as important because you'll have positives in big moments. And I'm not saying that he needs to be out there running pick and rolls to try to score. I mean, literally, like, it would benefit the team if one of their point guards is the player who would get the ball across half court in 5 or 6 seconds and run an initial nothing action. And Marcus and Derek could both do that completely capably. And I think if they did that, if Jason allowed them to do that, if the coaching staff directed, if all those things, a lot fewer people would be calling for trading Marcus Smart and looking for a different type of point guard. And I think if they actually did trade him, what they would find is that the exact same problems persist, because it's not actually a problem of that their point guards can't pass and run the offense. It's that their point guards don't run the offense. They run their offense through their wings, who have these problems late in the game. And so that's where my thinking on, like, Marcus's value as a regular season in-game playmaker, as a playoff performer, as a willing, if not particularly good shooter, as a very versatile defender, is more valuable than what you're likely to get looking for a sort of traditional point guard, right? But I always just come back to that.
Yeah, I think you summed that up perfectly there. It's a Smart deal would just be a shake it up type scenario, being like, all right, let's try to wake everyone up with some fresh blood. But from a solving your issue standpoint, I don't think there's not gonna be a deal out there where you're gonna find someone who probably commands more respect as a point guard than Marcus Smart does. It'd be nice for some degree to have a guy who's not, I guess, seeking out those 3-point shots late in the game where other teams are abandoning him and he's looking to take that shot maybe a little more than he should. But I think this year that was also a problem. And I think whatever player comes back in that role would also have a host of other issues that, you know, Smart does better than them. So it's a scenario where, you know, the phone lines will be open on him, but it's hard to foresee that coming to fruition there. But so let's look at bigger picture, like, CBA now for the present and the future, and to, like, laying it out. You said some of this stuff doesn't become enacted for a year now. Heading into this offseason, assuming, again, the Celtics stay under the second apron here, or even if they go over the second apron, do they still have the mid-level exception for now? Like, how do these moves potentially impact of reducing salary now impact what they can do this offseason, or is all that pretty much as is for this summer, for this first year?
So now you're asking me the specifics of which year the different things roll in, and I don't have it off the top of my
head. Come on, Ryan. No, like, dude, they have the mid-level exception this year, no matter what. Like, that's, yeah, it's just as a smaller version, but depending on how high they go into the tax.
Yeah, and there's trade trade limitations get rolled in on the second apron. Now, I don't think they're going to be over the second apron, mostly because, well, maybe they will. I don't think they'll end up there. Because I think they're going to have to cut money somewhere, even if they bring back Grant and Malcolm, and it's like moving Gallinari or something like that. But the restrictions that come in for the second apron this year are not super onerous. The draft stuff, the loss of the mid-level, the TPEs all disappearing, things like that don't kick in right away. But they roll in the second year.
Is that more of a case to push it all in even more in this upcoming year?
I don't think that's the right thing to do. I don't think I continually look at this team, and no matter how much you want them to be all in, and maybe they need to be. But you just look at it and say, like, Jason Tatum's 25 years old. And do you really want, when he's 27 years old, to be answering the question, either did we win the title in the last 2 years or is he out the door? Because, you know, you've put yourself in a position where you're having to rebuild half the roster or the whole roster around him at that point, where he's entering his prime and he looks around and says, boy, this isn't what I signed up for when I signed this extension. And so you want to be sustainable. It's just that this new CBA makes it much more difficult to be sustainable, particularly if your starting point is beyond the limits of what they have now given you as the limits. Now, again, those were not the limits before. They did not do anything wrong. They built how you were supposed to build a team under the last CBA. They drafted a bunch of guys. They made reasonable trades. They signed extensions. They didn't go over the luxury tax for years to avoid different, you know, the different repeater penalties and things like that. And then said, well, we made the finals. Now we're going. Now we're going to go and get Gallinari. We're going to go and get Brogdon. And then the league turns around halfway through the year and is like, ha ha, actually, that's all bad. And we don't want you doing that. And by the way, you're going to have one transaction cycle in order to fix these problems. And it's just bad design. Like, it's unfair to certain teams that it's poor design. It's going to cause a bunch of havoc around the league. It's probably going to make a lot of fans unhappy. And so that's the reality of it. They can be all in. It's not, you know, like you said, if there's a case for it, if they made the finals again, would we be having this conversation? Would we be saying, no, you have to be all in, you have to be pushing, you have to be doing what the Bucks did when they went and got Drew and said, you know, we need to win now with Giannis, who would have been, was the same age that Tatum will be next year. So I just don't think that that's prudent. I don't think that's the design of how, you know, what the design of the CBA leads you to say. But there is a year where if you were going to do it, you know, before Jalen's contract kicks in, before all the rules kick in, you can do it. But boy, you better have a plan for how to deal with that a year from now. That's pretty set in stone and severe, and you're willing to risk having to pay in order to make that happen. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a world of hurt the year after that.
Yeah, it would certainly put the pressure on. And you look around the East, and I guess a lot of these teams are going to be in a tough spot. We'll see what happens in Philly. We'll see what Milwaukee can do. But there, you know, there are plenty of other teams that are in tough spots as well. The Celtics, I assume, are going to be title favorite, East favorites going into next year, depending on how this plays out, at the end of the summer. But it, like you said, that carries a lot of risk with it. So,
speaking of title favorites, before we move on, I just want to, this is hilarious that Caleb Martin is currently in game one of the finals, 0 for 5, meter shooting, under 40% from the field, 25% from three. The Nuggets are shooting 50, 40, 100. and all of that stuff that caught the Celtics in game one at altitude here. While we're talking, I'm watching the box score update going, boy, one game too late. would have been nice for the Heat to decide to shoot 25% against the Celtics a couple of games ago.
Max Strus 0-7.
It's just like,
and you. Well, I wonder if the Nuggets are guarding Caleb Martin. That'll be the question.
Who knows? Yes, I'm sure these are all tightly contested shots. All 16 of their threes have been beautifully contested, and they haven't missed a single open shot. And really, it was all just the Celtics' defense that was miserable and terrible, and no luck was involved. But yes, they're down 15 coming to the end of the first half, and can't shooting like the Celtics did. Funny how that works. Doesn't hurt my feelings at all. Totally okay with this.
There might be a lot of broken TVs in Celtics headquarters by the end of this, but they're probably, or at home. They're not watching this at the Airback Center. All right, let's kind of wrap up here. We'll be able to dive more into, you know, draft and specific, you know, names to target and free agency and whatnot as that gets closer here. But the rest of the roster from the bench standpoint, we talked about Grant, but we didn't talk about like Gallo, Rob Williams, and Al Horford, I think are fully safe just for a variety of reasons on that front. But I'm curious, well, I assume with Gallinari, if you kept him at the trade deadline, you're keeping him. If they traded him this offseason, that would look really, really like, what are we doing? I feel like, I guess you can make the case that the CBA might. That's what I'm thinking though. But like, if it's like, well, if you're going to give him away now, like, why didn't you do that when you could maybe help the team?
Well, my point, not helping the team in terms of adding a player, like they may trade him, may have to pay.
Yeah, they'll have to add, they'll have to
cap space or something, you know,
right.
Another
attach a pick
off a contract. And this one would not be their fault, as opposed to some of the ones in years not that long ago where you felt like they had made a miscalculation and they were paying to get off it. This would be completely just like the CBA has put them in a bad spot. So it would be understandable. I assume something has to go. Somebody is going to have to go because I think they're going to have to cut costs in some places. And again, that could just be that Grant gets an offer that's $18 million and they can't match it. But if not, it could be, yeah, Gallinari and Muscala out to save $10 million and you replace them with minimums for $4 million or something like that. That's also, it could be that simple.
Muscala is going to be fascinating. It's $3.5 million team option.
He's a
which
good
is just,
player.
He's a good player. Slightly above the minimum, just like for his, cool. for someone his, with his experience. Obviously he'd be guaranteed to come back if Grant went out there, but at that point, no, he'd have to make a decision on that anyway, regardless, before they probably even know yeah. about Grant. Even though I guess probably those negotiations will be going ongoing in the middle of June, despite them, you know, officially not taking place till July 4th or whatever. But yeah, like in terms of the complexion of the bench now, if Brogdon is gone, what, how would you ideally like to reconstruct things from just a positional standpoint here? Is it finding another wing to maybe take some pressure off of the Jays and then can actually stretch the floor a little bit, slash defend? I mean, those guys don't grow on trees, but you do have some weapons and some salary to try to find someone and that can do at least some of that stuff.
I don't think they do, though, because you can't spend money long term. Like, I just don't think there's money there. You can find a guy like Caleb Martin, right? Like, you can find right. somebody who's way underpaid and who you get lucky on and or have very good scouting on or something like that. But just wings are so expensive. Like, the idea that they're going to be able to add another playoff caliber wing, that's seems like a long shot.
So where'd you go for a big or like a best player available type situation?
I don't know if they're adding anybody. I mean, I'm talking about like cutting money for long-term sustainability here. So I can't then turn around and say like, oh, I expect them to go and get this like good player who they're going to put in there. Like, I think that your team, if they were able to move Brogdon for cost saving purposes, like I said, you know, you may get back a player in that who just makes a lot less money and is a useful player. You may be getting like literally nothing back. And again, they may just keep Brogdon in. Like, the roster may be very, very similar to what it is now, and they just have to make some moves, like I said, Gallinari and Muscala or something like that. But your core playing rotation is very much similar. If they have made a move, like, I think it would be completely reasonable to say, like, Smart, Jalen, Jason, Grant, and Rob are starting. Al, and as you know, to try to save his legs in the regular season, comes off the bench. Derek White, who should be starting over Marcus in that conversation, really, but for political reasons wouldn't, because he's your sixth man. And comes in whenever anybody's hurt, which is always going to happen. You have to elevate Hauser. Like, Sam Hauser needs to be playing in the playoffs next year, because otherwise you don't have enough. You need wings and shooting. And if Duncan Robinson and, you know, can play, then yeah, you want Sam Hauser to do more of the things that he was doing with back cutting and stuff like that as part of your offense. But like, he needs to play. And then, like I said, I think Muscala is actually a good player and could be part of that rotation. And yeah, you feel like you're short a wing, but so's 28 other teams. Like, everybody's short a wing, and you hope that you can find one and develop another Javonte Green or Max Strus from that same class, or Sam Hauser. Where that player's coming from, it's kind of hard to envision, but I don't
number know 35 overall pick.
Yeah, Juhan Bigeron, right? And you may be in a position where, like, where does Gallinari fit into that, coming off an injury at his age and everything? Like, yeah, he can, I'm sure he can still shoot, but where would he fit into that? Maybe you look at that and say, if they had Gallinari healthy, they never would have gone and got Muscala to begin with. So it's an either or for them. Like, but you're talking about 10th man in the rotation sort of stuff. Like, I think it's most likely that the top nine guys are coming from this roster some way or another, and maybe even more than that. And they're largely running it back.
I don't know. I think they should. I would get if they do that. I think that would be underwhelming if they do that. I don't know.
They can't trade more picks, like, especially with the way that the CBA is coming in. Those guys who get picked at 25th and make $2.5 million, $3 million a year, like, you're going to need them in order to fill out a roster that fits under the second apron once Tatum is making 35%, and either Jalen is as well, or you've traded Jalen for two guys who are making less but still add up to a lot of money, and you've kept Rob and Marcus, and you know, you can, Derek White's open for an extension this year. Open for him, like, he can be extended this year. You have to keep a pipeline of cheap young talent coming in. And like, how are you going to acquire these players if you can't trade away your first round picks? Like,
go to the Miami Heat route.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you find these players and you can just develop them, then that's amazing. But you know, you're banking a lot on that. I think there's an interesting conversation about, depending on what else happens and the timing of how things work out and all that, about Pritchard. And he obviously wants to be traded, but if they can go back to him and say, you're actually the third guard on this team and you're not going to drop out of the rotation, you know, there's a role for you here. I think it would be hard to extend him, because he would hear that and think, well, then I'm going to take my year and then try to make money out on the, you know, out on the free agent market if I actually have a role here and you're not going to trade me. But maybe he can be extended at a reasonable, you know, pretty low price, and he's a third guard and settles into that role. I just, they would need somebody there. So I think there's an interesting conversation there. If you lost him as well, you would have to replace that, because you would need another guard at that point if you lost, you know, both right. Brogdon and Pritchard. But in terms of like high profile acquisitions that people might want to go look at, it just seems really unlikely that they're in a position to do that just because of what's coming down the line.
It's true. But yeah, the Pritchard scenario, that's a fascinating one too, in terms of like, would he trust them to sign that extension? Thinking like, would they lay out a case for him after trading Brogdon, being like, listen, this is how the new CBA works. Like, you're our guy now. You're our bench guard for this year and the foreseeable future. So sign for X, Y, and Z. Like that, I think that would probably be good business for them in the long term, in terms of being able to maximizing this roster with their limitations and staying relevant in the present. But that's, given how this past year gone, given how he's been yanked around the last couple of years, that'll be a fascinating just like discussion, especially since they'd have to sign that deal with him by the end of October
and decide not to trade him, right?
Right.
Where he fits in the initial trade market and what's moving around, and if they want to trade him and get a second round pick out, because again, they need to have a pipeline of younger talent coming in down the line. And it seemed in the middle of the year like they'd almost promised him that. I don't think they did, but the way he sort of talks about it, he's just assuming that he's being traded, right. That there's a trade coming, that he wants to be traded, that maybe he's trying to just speak it into existence. I don't know, but how out is he on the team after basically going through a run into the finals and playing through the playoffs, and then turning around and they go and get a veteran player and put him above him, and he's basically, you know, barely playing this year when the money's really on the line for him.
Malcolm Brogdon miss every single shot.
Yeah, I mean, that injury was just so unfortunately timed. Like Derek White getting injured right when he was getting on a roll in game 7, and Jason Tatum getting injured 26 seconds in, and whatever happened to Rob he's a parent, so it's May and he gets rotavirus and is throwing up, and who knows what happened with Jalen's hand and everything, you know. But yeah, the Brogdon one is sort of the most visible one, because he went from shooting 44% in the regular season to not being able to hit the rim in the playoffs, and yet throughout that series he's playing most of the time, and you're going, this seems like a mistake, this doesn't seem like the right thing to be doing right now. But tough situation for Pritchard. It's understandable for him to be sitting there and thinking like, my career is on the line here and my future earnings are on the line, and suddenly I'm just completely out of contention here for minutes even. So it would be understandable even if they went to him and said, look, there's going to be a role for him, and he was just like, pound sand, I want to get out of here. And then they'd have to decide what they want to do there. It may even be that they would just keep him and say like, okay, well, we'll figure it out when you get to restricted free agency. But I mean, I think he's a professional. Like, they put him on the floor, he's going to play and try hard. I don't think
he'll play
up sticks and quit on the team. He didn't last year. Every time they put him out there, he worked hard and tried. But you can understand where he's coming from.
All right. Well, that'll be one of the many subplots between. We didn't even really talk about the Grant situation much. We'll get into that later this month, along with everything else on the table for this team as draft approaches. We do have a relevant top 40 draft pick, first time in the Brad Stevens era. That'll be exciting, Ryan. We have the full release of the collective bargaining agreement coming at a time to be determined, probably 12 hours
one hour before 15 minutes before free agency starts. They're gonna put the whole thing out. Who knows?
It's gonna be electric to find out what
everybody trying to understand how all these little paragraphs got turned into 600 pages of legalese will be a wonderful experience on the eve of free agency.
What a league. But I guess baseball did the same exact thing when they started up their season last year. But
there's no rules in baseball.
There's no rules. This is true. Everything's like dirty. All right. Make sure you're following Ryan, as always, at Danger Carp. Make sure you check out his Medium post with a extensive breakdown of what we do know about the CBA so far. That will, and there'll be sure be more to come on there and on here with Ryan as the offseason continues and we find out more. But that's your start. It's going to be a real interesting set of choices for Brad Stevens and company. And I don't know, Ryan, will be any final thoughts here? What's are you, your status quo is that's your, the name of your game here?
Not really. Like I said, I think that the name of the game now is getting ready for a future where they do have to trade Jalen, but it's not this year, and getting your books in line for dealing with this new agreement, which, as I've said, I think is poorly designed and unfair. But it's the rule set you're given, so you have to deal with it. But I mean, that's when I read it, when I go through the rules and try to map it all out, the takeaway that I have is that they have a maximum of 2 years for the pair of Jalen and Jason, unless they win a title and are just like, screw it. Like, we're making so much money and we're going to keep it all together somehow, and we'll deal with losing draft picks 7 years down the line and all that. And maybe that does actually change things. But to me, it's like, yeah, you've got 2 years to either do that or make a move, and probably only 1 year. And probably this year you need to start moving in the direction of what this CBA is saying that they want teams to do. So not really status quo, but at the very top of the rotation, yeah, probably status quo.
All right. Well, those 2 years will be pretty important. But the work starts now to get the books in place, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it all off-season long here on the Wing Plays Pod with Ryan and several others. But thanks for listening, guys, and we'll get back with you next week.